Mr. President, I move that Senate Bill number 492 with the committee substitute be taken up for
You've
protection.
Heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before us.
Thank you, Mr. President. I now move that Senate committee substitute for Senate Bill number 492 be adopted. What this bill is about is performance funding for higher education. In 2012, many of us voted on House Bill 1731, which basically said that we would develop a comprehensive funding formula for Missouri public institutions of higher education by December 13, 2013. General Assembly shall implement a funding formula beginning in the fiscal year 2015. And so what this is designed to do is to come up with a funding formula for our 13 four-year public institutions. Missouri has not really had a funding model for distributing base funding to our institutions since the early 1980s. And what this does, it provides a rational form. It provides a way that has a blueprint of how we should fund our institutions across the state of Missouri. It's not necessarily a directive on how funding will be spent, but rather it's a model on what they can attain and what they should shoot for. Performance funding is not new. In fact, there's some 30 states across the country that are doing this. And it basically gives tools and power to our institutions so that they can find things that they want to work for, that they can establish goals, and then hopefully work toward those goals that we think will be in the best interest of the state of Missouri. It is not a new concept. It's been talked about in our state. We did have some language last year that dealt with this, passed through the Senate last year, but we basically ran out of time before the House was able to bring it up. This bill this year is dramatically different. What this does, it takes into consideration just new funding. So how it's broken out is that 90% of new funding will be susceptible to performance funding, and then 10% of new funding will be based upon inequity issues, of which the universities have come to terms with. And so what we're dealing with is new funds. The institutions themselves will be able to come up with the parameters that they think are important, that they're going to shoot for, and they're going to aspire to improve upon, and so we do give them the tools to work for. Currently, the status quo doesn't work. Every institution is treated the same. Either they all get an increase or they all get a decrease. And there's no determination made whether they're successful, whether they're meeting objectives. They all get the same. Now, the last few years, there have been some performance measures that have been established. However, there's nothing in state statute. And as staff members of Department of Higher Education come and go, as governors come and go, as we come and go, there's nothing that actually will stand the test of time that basically says that we have performance funding in our state statute. This is designed for when we're long gone from this legislature, that we will establish a blueprint for funding of higher education. And I think this is an important step for us to make sure that our four-year institutions are successful, as efficient as possible in meeting the state needs. Be glad to take any questions, or if not, I renew my motion.
You've heard the motion from the senator from Johnson. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from the 3rd District, for what purpose do you rise?
Require the senator from Johnson.
Senator from Johnson, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, last year we were looking at a matrix or a grid that broke down the performance funding. Realizing that this year this bill strictly deals with new money, are we still using that same matrix or grid from last year?
No, I would say this bill is dramatically different from last year. And last year we did use existing money plus new money. And then that grid you're talking about is how we put the 13 four-year institutions in different classifications, the Carnegie classifications. And we had some institutions that were research. We had some that were highly selective, and we had four or five different categories, and then their funding was based on those categories. That is not in this bill. And so that was one that we spent a lot of time on last year as far as debating which universities should be in a category. That was tough, you know, to decide who your peer categories would be, but that's not in this.
What's the key variables this year that they have to reach to be able to get this performance funding? What's the components of that performance?
Right. Under this, there are five standards that they would have to submit that they want to be evaluated and based on. Two of those would be graduation and retention, and then the others would basically be up to the institutions themselves. So let's say if an institution had a unique mission, if they were a research institution, if they were an open enrollment, if they were meeting high-need students, they could put that as far as things for them to shoot for. And then they will submit that to the Department of Higher Education, and the Department of Higher Education will set up parameters with that university and will determine if that university is making strides on those performance standards. Now, at least two of them, one has to be graduation and one has to be retention.
Thank you, Senator. I truly appreciate the effort that you put into this bill.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Senator from Buchanan, for what purpose do you rise?
To inquire.
Senator from Johnson, do you yield? He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. So this would only apply to the new funding or increases in funding.
That is correct.
So you know that the school in my district, Missouri Western, supposedly is the most inequitable school, or perhaps the second. And so my question is that will this proposal eventually, over the course of years, lead to equity?
90% of the new money would go for performance funding, and then 10% would go to equity funding. And so, and you're right, you'd mentioned your institution back home. It would address those needs of some past inequity issues. And so in the long run, I can't tell you exactly when it would be at a, what would you call a break even or an equal par, but that is what that is designed to do.
So 10% a year, I mean, they're going to take, in other words, let's just say that there's an extra $100 million. So $10 million of that would be spread out over the schools in such a way that the equity would come up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And that would be based on a weighted average of the students. And so it would be based on the numbers that they would have. If you recall, a couple of years ago, it was the very last week of the session. It was the very last week of the budget when we were debating the budget. And the House brought up the fact that one institution had inequity funding. So that institution got quite a bit of money. And then there was $3 million added at the very end. And most institutions got some, but a few didn't. And then last year, those two institutions that didn't get any were made somewhat whole. And so what this is designed to do is to also take a look at universities that maybe have not had equity funding over the past.
Okay, why did you choose 10%?
Well, the reason why I chose was because I felt as much money as we possibly can should be fueled into performance funding. And I thought that was very important. Equity funding, I think, is more controversial. And if you asked every senator in this room what their definition of equity funding would be, you'd probably get a different answer. It's harder to nail down. It's harder to maybe get as much support on that. And I think that that more people would certainly think the performance funding, where we give the institutions the ability to determine what those standards are going to be, are probably much more acceptable.
But if you had made a 20%, it would take half as long to achieve equity, wouldn't it?
I would suppose so. Mm-hmm.
And if you made it 30%, it would take a third as long. The thing is, does some of that 90% have the potential of helping to solve some of the equity problem?
Maybe indirectly. If, for example, one of the institutions had one of their standards would be that they would focus on open enrollment or on low-income students, which
that could theoretically do.
Right, which could be much more expensive to put those students through because you have to work with them very, very carefully, and you got to work on them a lot to make sure they stay in school and they are retained. And so if you do that, that could reflect on performance, and also it could make up for some inequity issues as well. So I guess what I'm saying is by the university doing well on performance, that would also indirectly help out on their on their inequity issues.
Well, and that you're talking about my school, actually. We have open enrollment, so that is somewhat of a burden, and we also have quite a few minority students at Missouri Western. So,
and it could be a case where a university, and I know your university does a lot of first-generation students, it could be a case where your university, that's one thing they focus on. You know, that it's very important to get first-time student, first-generation students in there because it's life-changing when you get people in, and they're the very first one ever in their whole family, the history of their family, to get a college degree. It's huge.
So, but whether or not that those parameters would be put in place would depend on the Coordinating Board of Higher Ed, wouldn't it, under this proposal?
Well, I mean, we'd be putting in state statute. I mean, we would
right now
it's not there. It's just
but it's under this you've authorized the coordinating board to come up with the parameters by which the 90% would be distributed.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So really it's the coordinating board that we're empowering to decide whether or not open enrollment would be one of the—
Well, it would be up the institutions to determine what those five standards are going to be. And then they would submit that to Department of Higher Education, and then they would determine if they have met those or not. In fact, that's going on right now.
Oh, okay.
The budget work we're working on right now, the different appropriations for the 13 public institutions, they have already been given an assignment on how many they've met. Three out of five, four out of five, or five out of five.
I'm curious, during the hearing on this bill, did you hear from the various four-year institutions?
Yeah, we did. Well, we heard from them organization-wide. The four-year institutions belong to the Council on Public Higher Education, COFE, and all 13 institutions are part of that, and they testified in support of that. And so they testified in mass, if you will, for the bill.
Okay, so
on the other hand, there were no individual institutions that came in opposition.
Right. Okay. That was important to me. Now, if this were to become law, how would it work on the appropriations process? Would the appropriations committee be locked into following these recommendations?
Well, of course, you and I both serve on the Appropriations Committee, and so we know that many ways, that's one way that we have a tremendous amount of ability and authority when we get involved in the appropriations process. And so we would have these as, these would be recommendations from the Department of Higher Education, but I believe that through the appropriations process that we could make some changes in that. Right now, there's no recommendation, there's no directive to the legislature or Department of Higher Education how the funds are distributed at all. And so what this does, it puts it in state statute that we as a state, that we as a legislature, feel that it's very important to have performance funding and also the equity issue.
Well, in the sentence on the first page, on line 14, it says, the appropriation of increases, ... shall be in accordance. My question is that sentence constitutional? Because what we're doing here is we're binding future legislatures to this legislature's will by passing that sentence. And so, you know, I don't know the answer, but is that a potential pitfall for this bill?
I don't believe so. I think what we're doing is we are giving a formula on how we want to distribute the funds. The legislature has the ability through the appropriations process to come through and make changes in that. But this is what we were tasked to come up with a funding formula, and that's what this does.
The reason I ask is, let's just say that the formula says one thing, and the appropriations committee decides, you know, some institution is going to get a little bit more, some institution is going to get a little bit less than what the allocation would say. Then my question is, could the institution that got a little bit less go to court and win by virtue of that sentence that says it shall be in accordance with this standard, Or the one that got a little bit less, saying, hey, that, you know, that isn't right. I just wondered, I'm throwing that out for discussion.
That was never brought up throughout the committee process. No one's brought that up. When we were going through talking with the universities, that point was never brought up. I don't believe that it would.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. President?
Senator from Buchanan.
To inquire of the senator from Boone.
Senator from Boone, do you yield to an inquiry? He does. Proceed.
Senator, you heard my inquiry, and I just wanted your opinion real quick. On the first page of this bill, the sentence that says that the appropriation will be or shall be in accordance with this formula, is there a potential problem we're creating here?
I do think there's a potential problem there. And I think there's an issue with, you know, as chairman of appropriations, and, you know, you're on that committee, you spend a lot of time, I have a problem really with any bill that takes away our discretion as elected senators on a lot of issues and says, well, we're going to let some bureaucrats decide how much money should be here, and you just have to put that amount of money in. Because the budget goes up, the budget goes down, we have a lot of difficult decisions we have to make in a given year, we have to make a lot of adjustments. And the more our hands are tied, things that are taken away from us to weigh those things is an issue. And I was getting ready to inquire the senator from the 21st as well, because there are a lot of other things that go along with this bill as well. But on answer to your question, I think that is a problem.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. President.
Further discussion? Senator from Boone.
Fire the senator from the 21st.
Senator from the 21st. You yield to an inquiry?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I know, and again, we had a conversation last year, and this is a different formula than you had last year. And I think it's a move in a better direction. And I know last year, in discussing this with you and the senator from the 15th as well, some of those factors that were in the formula last year, for example, for Truman, part of that formula was there was an economic incentive if institutions expanded. But you take an institution like Truman, I mean, they've essentially capped themselves because they don't believe that they can provide the quality that they hold themselves to if they start bringing in more students based on how much money they have, which I absolutely agree with them on that. And so I think that is a better move. But so your bill, and help me understand this. So what we do in the bill, you lay out the five criteria, but you don't set a formula. The formula will actually be established by the coordinating board?
Right. Mm-hmm.
How long has a coordinating board been in existence? If you don't know, it's decades,
I would
think
so, decades.
A long
70s
time.
Or so, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we've got this problem with funding for higher education, which the coordinating board was tasked with resolving to a certain extent at its inception, and now we're decades down the road and we still have the problem. So,
But that's how it's done now. I mean,
well, part of the
universities, they put in their requests, and the coordinating board, they go through that, and then they give us the final recommendation on what they think it should be.
Right, and the coordinating board works with the institutions, just like, you know, COFI, which is those organizations all together. And the problem is they all get together and they all try and work together and come up with some way of funding that is beneficial to everyone. But my personal belief is I think we've hit a point where we can no longer acknowledge that they are all the same, because they're not.
They're not at all, right.
Right. And my concern is, you know, giving funding to the coordinating board and then essentially saying we're not going to take that up in appropriations, coordinating board can set a formula, I'm very concerned about what comes out of that process. And you and I have talked about this, because I think that as chairman of education, you know something's got to give here. But the problem is we've got schools like Truman, who has probably the highest academic standards in the state of the four-year institutions. You have the University of Missouri-Columbia, which is also very high. And then we're going to take other institutions that are very low, and they serve different populations, I understand that, but we're going to try and say that they're all the same. So if we're going to come up with five criteria that are going to meet that gamut of schools, those different requirements, I don't know that that can be done. And what I've said in the appropriations process, and as I've been here now going on my sixth budget, the problem is that higher education pie, cut in 13 pieces, is never going to be big enough. It's just not. And yet what we do, because we don't want to make any schools mad, we perpetuate the situation where, well, okay, we're going to adjust everybody's piece, But at some point, we've got to take a critical look at what we're actually delivering here with the tax dollars. And so, for example, I wanted to talk to you about graduation rates. Because when you look at the spectrum of graduation rates, starting at the lowest, you've got Harris Stowe State University with an 8.5% graduation rate. 8.5. Lincoln University has a 20.5 graduation rate. Missouri Western has a 27% graduation rate. Missouri Southern has a 33% graduation rate. The University of Missouri-Kansas City, 41%. Southeast Missouri State, 46%. Northwest Missouri State, 48%. University of Central Missouri, 49%. University of Missouri-St. Louis, 50%. Missouri State University at Springfield, 54%. Missouri State University of Science and Technology at Rolla, 67%. University of Missouri-Columbia, 68.9%. And Truman State University at 70.2%. So we have institutions that get tax dollars, and they all want to argue they're all the same. They're not. They range in graduation rates from 70.2% to 8.5%. We have to have something that acknowledges that some of these institutions are delivering a high-quality product, some are not. And we can talk about failure on student loan repayment rates, which at some of the institutions is astronomical. I mean, some of these institutions are bringing in students that are not ready to go to a four-year institution. They're borrowing a lot of money. They drop out about their sophomore year. They don't pay back their student loans, and we just bring in more students. Something's got to give on that. And I think what we need to do is have a more comprehensive discussion about what each one of these institutions do and really how they justify their existence. I think for the tax dollars we give those institutions, every one of them should have to come in and not say, well, he got this much last year, so I get this much now. It should be, I deserve this amount of money of taxpayer dollars because I'm delivering X, Y, and Z, and I'll stand up in front of you and say that. So really, for the first time in the appropriations process, what we're going to do on February 11th, we're going to call in the presidents of every one of those institutions, those public four-year institutions, and we're going to ask them these questions. If you have an 8.5% graduation rate, if you have a 33% graduation rate, why are you asking us for more taxpayer dollars? And I think until we answer these questions, and I agree with you, we have to have some way to fund all these things, but we've got to answer these questions. Because the other thing is, for example, you know, you run the gamut on four-year institutions from highly selective in who they take in with, I think Truman has a 24 ACT is their average. I think the University of Missouri-Columbia is that way. I've got those numbers. Which
it's a high number. That's
it may be a little bit higher than
process.
That. All the way down to open enrollment four-year institutions. And it really begs the question, why do we have any open enrollment four-year institutions? We have community colleges, which by nature are open enrollment. We're putting a whole lot of money now in the A-plus program for people that want to go to a four-year institution but maybe aren't qualified to do it right out of high school. That avenue is there. So why do we have any open enrollment four-year public institutions? That's the role of the two-year institutions. And again, open enrollment. Harris Stowe is an open enrollment. Lincoln is an open enrollment. And Missouri Western is an open enrollment. And I think it begs the question, why do we have it? And again, I think these are the critical things that we've got to look at because there's two things here. One is I think you want to take those institutions like the University of Missouri, like Truman, some of the others that are offering a very, very high-quality, nationally competitive education. And you want to incentivize that and give them the resources they need to provide the highest quality education. Then you have other institutions that, because of geographics and other issues, exist to provide a solid four-year degree. But we need to acknowledge those things are not all the same. So how do we come up with a funding mechanism that addresses that?
Well, a couple of things. I don't think that under this formula that we are treating them the same. And currently, right now at the status quo, we are. It's one size fits all. They're all getting an increase, or they're all getting a decrease. And so I don't think that's sustainable at all. And so this is a step in the right direction that takes a look at the unique strengths and weaknesses of our universities and holding them accountable for how they perform. And, you know, you had talked about the graduation rates, retention rates, and that's true. I think all of us realize that the sooner that we can get students through the pipeline, the less the dropout, the less that we're going to saddle students with financial debt when they get out, the better off we all are. I mean, if you drop out after your junior year and you got $40,000 in debt, your future is not very bright. And you just wasted time, you're saddled with debt.
But we probably shouldn't have used taxpayer dollars to get somebody in that position in the first place. That's my concern.
So where this goes is what we're trying to do is to allow these universities to come up with standards that they hold themselves accountable for through performance funding. It's in state statute. Right now it's not. I mean, this is just something that DESE administers. The governor, when he proposes his budget, it comes out in his budget. But we're going to have different governor in a few years. We're going to have different folks in higher ed, and we're going to have different legislature then. So that is why I think it's so important that we put things in the state statute so we are working toward ways to differentiate. It's not one size fits all.
And I've got the criteria because most of these institutions, with few exceptions, with very low graduation rates, and I'm going to talk about some of the student repayment rates, they still meet five of the five criteria, most of them. I think Harris Stowe meets four of the five.
I do have a list of how it is for this year, if you want that. There's five standards. Five of the universities met all five, and that was Southeast, Missouri State, Truman, Northwest, and MU. And MU has treated all four institutions. Three of them met four out of five, and that was UCM, Missouri Southern, and Harris Stowe. And two of them met three out of five, which was Lincoln and Missouri Western.
And so two out of the five?
They met three out of five.
Three out of five.
There's two of them that did.
Okay, so what that means is they continue to get their core funding, but 90% of any additional funding is reduced by some amount because they meet three out of the five.
That would be correct. Or four out of five or five. I mean, yeah.
But then potentially they could get equity funding too.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. See, I mean, from my perspective, I think that's moving us in a direction, but it's not going far enough. And I think that, I mean, we've got to make the tough decisions in here on higher ed dollars, which, again, that pie is never going to be big enough. What do we want? Because right now you've got all these institutions, and every institution has a board of trustees or a board of governors. And every year they have lots of meetings, and they decide, what are we going to offer? And if you look at the mission creep that a lot of these institutions have experienced, especially in the last 10 years, it's unbelievable. They offer everything to everybody. We now have four-year institutions who are going to offer two-year degrees. We have got to rein this in, and I'm firmly convinced now that the only way we can do that is through the appropriations process. And so while we need some mechanism of how to fund that, what I don't want to do is have five generic criteria that, frankly, we're just giving suggestions on those criteria. We're going to allow higher ed or coordinating board to draft that formula and then basically tie our hands. What we need to do is create real balance between all these institutions. I wanted to give you some other numbers too. These are student default rates on student loans for 2013. So Harris Stowe is 27.9%, Lincoln 27.2%, Missouri Western 22%, Missouri Southern 14%, SEMO 13.3%, UMKC 9.7%, Northwest 9.7%, Central Missouri 9.2%, Missouri State 8.5%, Missouri S&T 5.3%, University of Missouri Columbia 6.1%, and Truman 3.7%. I mean, these are default rates on student loans, again, we're using tax dollars to put students in a situation they probably shouldn't be in. They're failing, they're not graduating, and they're not paying back their student loans, and then we come right back the next year, we ignore those results, and we say, yeah, we've got to give them more money. Oh, and by the way, we gave him X amount of money last year, so we got to give this other person money to bring them up to speed. And again, this concept of equity, and I want to talk to you about that too, because what is the criteria for equity? Because equity by nature is making people equal,
mm-hmm.
but they're not equal. So how do we determine what's equitable for an institution, you know, with a 22% graduation rate and a 22% default rate on student loans compared to an institution that has a 3.7% default rate and a 77% graduation rate? How do we determine the equity there?
I think that has been brought up by some of the faster-growing universities. that have tried to meet the demands and aren't keeping up with what they feel that some of the other peer institutions are getting. And I think everyone does have a different definition of what equity funding is, but that would be something that would be determined by Department of Higher Education on what that equity funding would be.
Let's talk about how some of those institutions are growing or not growing.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's another part, too. Some of these institutions, like Truman, I mean, they're turning students away because, again, they've imposed really a cap on themselves. You've got the University of Missouri that's growing exponentially, and then you've got institutions that are just hemorrhaging student population, and yet they just want more and more money. So, again, and I'm not picking on any institution, I'm just reading these in the order that they're in. The University of Missouri St. Louis lost 0.7% population in the last year. UMKC grew by 1.2%. Columbia grew by 2.9%. Central Missouri grew by 2%. Truman actually went down 1%, and I think that was part of their cap. Southeast Missouri State grew 1.3%. Northwest dropped by 4.5%. Missouri Western dropped by 5% in population. Rolla grew by 1.2%. Missouri State grew by 0.9%. Missouri Southern lost 1.4% of its population. Lincoln lost 8.8% of its population. And Harris Stowe lost 5.9% of its population. So again, the other issue is you've got some institutions that in the marketplace of students having the ability to go where they want to go are choosing programs that they know provide degrees that they want, and those institutions are growing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have institutions that clearly in the marketplace of where students could go are hemorrhaging student population. Yet again, they come in year after year and say, well, you know what? We got to have more money. You just got to give us more money. And I think we hit critical mass. I mean, in 2008, we were over $1 billion in higher ed. Now we're about $800 million.
Right.
Got down pretty low there. I mean, we got down to below $700 million 2 years ago. So the question is, do we just allow this to all creep back up and come up with kind of a system that lets everybody feel good and kind of get acknowledged that they exist?
And
so,
to me,
so they should get something?
To me, I think that's where we are now, that everyone is treated the same. That everyone
but we don't do anything to their existing core funding right now, which, frankly, that's a big part of the problem. Because I understand what your bill does is it just says, okay, for additional funding.
Now, last year in our bill, we took a look at core funding. I mean, it was 10% of core funding and then all additional new money as well. But this bill is different from that. It's just the new money.
Right. But for the foreseeable future, currently core funding at $800 million is going to make up the vast majority of what these institutions
get. Oh, absolutely. Right.
For a long time to come.
Right, right.
Because I think it's going to be a while before we get back up to the $1.1, $1.2 billion we were at just 5-6 years ago.
But I firmly believe it's a step in the right direction. You know, I think it is moving away from treating one size fits all, that the universities themselves are able to determine what they think is their unique mission and strive for that. You'd mentioned earlier, how do we get to this situation about open enrollment? How did that happen? Well, it's just evolved. And quite honestly, that is
no,
how
it did. You're exactly right.
Yeah.
It evolved because you had institutions that were losing population. I mean, in the marketplace, students didn't want to go there. So what do? You just lower your threshold. And you'll find somebody who will come. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't have graduated levels of institutions because they serve different purposes. But when we have an entire system of two-year community colleges that we give also a lot of tax dollars to, we put a lot of money into A+ so that, I mean, and now A+ applies to everybody. Used to be only, not all schools. But now, I mean, that means if you graduate from high school and you want to get a four-year degree but you don't qualify because you don't have the test scores or you don't have the GPA, you can go to a community college for 2 years and then go to a four-year institution. That is true open enrollment. So some of these institutions really exist only, I think, because they're open enrollment. So at some point you have to say, we don't really need any four-year open enrollment institutions.
And yet that was done because the universities have different board of governors, board of trustees.
And that's the problem.
We have a very I won't say unorganized, but it's not a cohesive policy decision-making process.
Right.
Some states do.
Right.
Kansas does. Iowa does. And there's some that it's very prescribed, very authoritative. We don't.
If you look at Ohio, you look at Georgia, you look at some of the states that used to be like us and then said, this is financially unsustainable. Why on earth would anyone do this? And they basically consolidated their campuses under one or two tiered systems and said, here's a structure. You eliminate procurement costs, you eliminate back office costs, and you create a system where you've got institutions that exist to serve a function, not just exist to exist.
Right. Or for a certain region.
Right. You know, in the concept of geographic regions for four-year institutions, that still makes some sense. It makes less sense than it used to. I mean, we got the governor doing TV commercials now for, what is it, Missouri governors?
Western governors.
Online, right.
Right.
Now, I don't know how many people are enrolling in that institution, but it shows you the fact that a lot of those institutions are moving on to no bricks and mortar.
Right.
And moving on to completely online. So it does change the dynamic.
Well, and that's a trend that's not going to go away. Whether it's Western governors or the privates that are going to provide that proprietary schools, it's here to stay. And our own colleges are going to have to compete with that. Colleges and universities are going to have to compete
and,
with
and
that.
And they are.
Right.
I mean, and we know the deferred maintenance and capital budget for the four-year institutions is just astronomical.
Right.
I mean, the idea that any time in the future we're going to have enough money to repair all those buildings and build the buildings that they want, and that's just not likely.
Right.
But it does make you wonder, do we need to have all those buildings when really we've got so much going online? Now, I think there's always going to be a need to have a centralized location where people go for a college degree, and maybe not everyone does that. But again, I think the bigger question is, how do we move past, you know, these little fiefdoms of every institution with a board of governors or board of trustees?
Well,
and coming together and saying, well, let's offer a degree in this. And hey, you know, we have an undergraduate degree. Let's do a master's degree. And coming up with nothing but marketing and ideas to make themselves relevant. When really, if you had a more centralized form of governance over those institutions, then it comes down to, I mean, it's a management decision. Why does this institution exist? What does it offer? And you look geographically, you look by program of what's offered in the state at other institutions. But I just don't think we get there if we codify a formula that has a little bit of variation, but for the most part still allows them to be treated very similarly, even though the reality now in 2014 is I don't think we have the luxury of having that much money any longer to treat them that way.
See, that's where I disagree with you, because I think this is a step in the right direction. I think this is a start that we're not going to treat them the same and that we're demanding performance. I just don't think that one size fits all works anymore, and we've seen that it doesn't. And I think we've also seen where our higher education policy has just evolved over decades. And this is a step in the right direction to maybe make some change.
Now, I think it's a step in the right direction.
The things you said, I can't disagree with you on a lot of those things. You know, why do we have 13? What's the magic number of 13? It just happened. And, you know, you can look at individual areas.
And you look back in history of when it happened, a lot of those came into existence or expanded when the state was just flush with money. I don't know if that's ever going to happen again.
Well, and you know, sitting in your position as chairman of appropriations, once you start a program or once you expand it, it's very hard to contract it or to get rid of it. I mean, it's just almost impossible.
Right.
And then
and
what
and
you're doing
mind,
is
some of these institutions, when they came into existence or went from being a two-year to a four-year institution, made promises. Just give us this. We will never come back
right.
and ask for anything else. And we only know that because there are still some old senators around who were around at the time who say, I remember 20 years ago when they said they wouldn't ask for anything else. And now they do.
Like the old senator from Nottoway.
One of many.
Right.
But the question is, I think, how do we get to that point where, and then, you know, that doesn't even take into consideration what you do with the 2 years, because there is a function there. And some states actually have gotten rid of their separate structure for 2 years and rolled that in with the 4 years. And essentially, whether you've got a 1, 2, or 3-tiered system, that system, basically, for what they're accountable for, does 4-year and 2-year degrees.
Some states also have K through 12 and community colleges in the same system.
Right, that's right.
And what I have found in doing research, no two states do it alike. I mean, we can pick and choose anyone that we kind of like, but it's no two states are alike. So there's really no wonderful
model. But there are some common lessons, though.
And
if you can consolidate some of the management aspects, and you don't have all these competing boards, because right now, I mean, all these boards of governors and boards of regents and whatever they want to call themselves, they're all competing. Now, to a certain extent, they're not competing for the exact same students. Because, for example, students that go to Truman are probably going to be different students than go to some of the other institutions or to the University of Missouri. But generally, they are competing for the same students. So it's a marketing plan every year. What can we do to get more students? When really, if you had some form of centralized management, what you would have is a business decision. We're not competing with ourselves anymore. We have X amount of dollars. We can spend X amount of what we bring in on tuition and what the state gives us to deliver the highest quality product. That's the direction that we need to be going.
So how would you propose doing that?
Well, and let me give you one more good example. Because Florida, for example, which had more of a system, and then they passed a law and they basically decentralized everybody, which is what we do now pretty much. And it went crazy. Costs went through the roof. All of a sudden you had each institution coming in and asking for way more money. You have problems with student retention, all kinds. So now they're going back the other direction, the direction that we should be going right now, which they never should have gone the opposite direction in the first place, but they're now going back to a system. And so the question is, how do we get there? And I'm convinced more than ever now that the only way to get there is to bring in those institutions, go through all of these statistics, and have institutions justify why they should have taxpayer dollars.
Oh, and I think...
And then I think we've got some tough decisions to make.
And I think that's a healthy process that we're going to go through next Tuesday. Is that
Yeah, February 11th.
In? I think that's a healthy process. I don't think that it's necessary to lay aside this discussion on performance funding. I think it's important that we're having this discussion.
But in the
4 years know that we are doing this, and we can move on both tracks at the same time. I don't think that's...
But I think on performance funding, I think the performance standards that are in your bill, from my perspective, they're not enough because it's too easy to meet those standards. And remember, we're not even setting the standards.
Right.
We're allowing the coordinating board to set the standards. We're just giving them a little bit of direction.
Right.
But I think even given that direction, it's not enough.
But now, as of today, there is nothing.
I know, but maybe what we could do is have those hearings and through the appropriations process and through your bill, I mean, we're very early in the session. Work together, get a little bit farther down the road, and maybe come up with something that's got more teeth in it to provide greater taxpayer protection for what we're giving these institutions to justify their existence and to make sure that we are providing services to students, not setting students up to fail, and delivering the highest quality product in higher ed that we can. Because, again, they are competing for the same dollars.
Oh, absolutely.
And some of these institutions, if you give them a dollar, they can stretch that dollar and deliver amazing results for it. Other institutions deliver virtually nothing for that dollar. And I'm afraid that the five criteria, if that's even what coordinating board ends up really using and what they come up with, it's not enough to really create that differentiation to get some substantial results that I think we need to get.
You know, politically, one thing we heard last year was it was too much. It was an overreach. It was too tough. Now, I know we had a fundamental disagreement on research institutions, so that was part of the Carnegie classification.
See, and that's the problem with the formula is they are all different.
They are.
Mm-hmm. And again, just like part of that formula, potentially...
But last year, we were trying to take in core funding, 10%. That was too tough. And then you're saying this isn't tough.
Well, I don't think it's too tough. I mean, I think, frankly, that your bill needs to address core funding. And that's one of the things that, I mean, I've got a couple amendments here that I can start offering, but I think core funding is something that has to be addressed. But again, the question is, it's very, very difficult for us to come up with a mechanism that really addresses the differences in all these institutions and really sets apart those that are successful and those that aren't. And so that's what I'm trying to get to.
What I'm saying is doing nothing is not an option. And so I think this is certainly a step in the right direction that where we need to go.
Well, I mean, what I would like to do, and I think your bill is a good move in the right direction. I don't think it goes far enough. I think what we need to do is hear from those presidents, get into some of these difficult questions that in now the sixth year that I've been on appropriations, we have never asked them. And I know in some of your education committees some of this has come up, but really in terms of dollars and look and just laying out the spreadsheet and the dollars that they get and the results that this state gets for every one of those dollars, that has never been done in the appropriations process. And I guess that's partially my fault. You know, I mean, I've been chair now, this is going on fourth year.
And yet, as it stands right now, on the state statute, we have certain institutions, they are open enrollment. So as a statewide policy,
I know
that's our statewide policy.
Yeah, that needs to be
changed.
And
so when you have a Harris Stowe that has a very, very, you know, the results that you mentioned were not good. However, they are working with a constituency that we as a state say is important, an open enrollment. And so can they do better? And with scrutiny and with performance standards, they probably can. But as it stands right now, that is the role that they've been assigned, which is open enrollment. And several of the universities are that way. So I don't think it's fair for us to necessarily criticize that they're open enrollment, because that's the law of the land right now. And until we can go in and change what those missions are going to be, then I don't think you're going to have major changes.
No, I agree with that. I mean, it's a culmination of a lot of things that got us to where we are now.
Right.
But I think kind of the absurdity of where we are now and some of these results and some of the funding requests, it's just really come to a head. And I think now is the appropriate time for us to step back and look at all that. And I'm afraid that if we pass a funding formula that's really not all that rigorous in what coordinating board is going to require, then somehow we're pushing it off and we're giving these institutions leverage to go, oh, look, you just fixed this. We don't need to come back to it. And when really, I think, you know, now is the time to move forward on some, you know, some arguably some tough decisions, but we have a leaner state budget now coming out of the recession. And I think that the state of our higher ed institutions, it's got to acknowledge that that's the reality now. So, first of all, I think the core has to be addressed.
Not just new money.
Not just new money. So what I would like to do is continue working on your bill, have that hearing. But, I mean, I've got some amendments I can go ahead and start.
Okay, and I do know there's another amendment that has been dropped at this point. Not by you, but by somebody else. We can discuss that as
well. There's been another amendment that's been dropped?
I saw one. Yeah, so one was.
I hadn't seen that one. Whose is that?
Dealing with the categories on performance standards. Because right now we have graduation, retention, and then this is another one, adding another one.
Yet. Is that the senator from Nottoway's amendment?
It is.
Yeah, it's a short amendment. I was trying to see what that does. So let me ask you this. On graduation rates, under the criteria that we would give the coordinating board, how would graduation rates impact future funding of that new money?
The individual institution would come up with what would be their goals, what they want to be evaluated on.
See, therein lies the problem. Because I don't think some of these institutions are ever, ever going to do anything that acknowledges or limits, I should say, their ability to continue to move forward to try and be everything to everybody.
Don't think they would if it had an impact on their funding?
Right, but if they get to set the standard, they set a goal. If they meet the goal, they can set that goal pretty low, and then they meet the goal, and they get it. That's why that ambiguity, to me, is not, I mean, it's just not rigorous enough for what needs to be done.
And so then should we as a legislature set every goal for every university?
If it was up to me, what I want to do, because to a certain extent it is up to us in appropriations, I think we need to have all those presidents come in, have them justify some of these statistics, and then have a very serious conversation about why we continue funding some of these institutions.
And that's okay for this year, but you're not going to be appropriations chairman forever.
So
every year it's going to be a different policy, and then it's basically going to be where we are today.
There's two ways to look at your bill as well. And one is the senator from the 31st mentioned, and that is that this is binding on future legislators, or it's not. And that every year we just appropriate anyway. And even if this thing passes, we're still just going to appropriate the way we want to appropriate.
I don't see that we're binding. I mean, we have a formula here that is the parameters that's going to be
used. My concern is that it is binding.
Yeah. Why, how would that be any different than what we do with K-12?
Well,
because I don't think it would be.
It's not.
And we do that, so.
Well, we got sued twice on that.
What's that?
We got sued twice on that, right? 1-1, lost 1.
Right.
I've got some other questions, too, because really when you go down through some of these statistics, again, which we probably should have done a long time ago, it's just really, really difficult to justify to taxpayers why we just keep ignoring some of the realities of this. Let's talk about it. So the institutions, and have you got the list of which institutions would meet all five criteria?
Yes, uh-huh.
All right, so what institutions would meet all five criteria?
You're talking about on this current budget that we're dealing with right now?
Well, yeah, let's say, for example, that the coordinating board uses the recommendations that we give them in the bill, and they use those to enact a formula. Although, again, we really don't know what they'd come up with, because just as you said, there's no hard and fast rule on graduation rates. It's allowing the institutions to set an arbitrary goal of what they would like to reach. And it's pretty easy to set a goal that you know you can reach, mm-hmm. whether that's
so rigorous. Did you want the breakouts of the colleges? Is that what you want?
Yeah.
Again, there are five standards. Five colleges met all five. And that was Southeast, Missouri State, Truman, Northwest, and MU. Three met 4 out of 5, which is UCM, Missouri Southern, and Harris Stowe. And then 2 met 3 out of 5, and that was Lincoln and Missouri Western. And these results just came out basically a few weeks ago at the State of the State when the budget was unveiled.
All right, so let's use the 2 that only got 3 out of 5. So of the 90% of additional funding, does each one of those five criteria represent an equal amount of money?
Yes.
Or are they weighted differently?
And see, what happened when let's say if you met 5 out of 5, then your increase from performance funding, this is the budget we're working on right now, would be 5.89%. If you met 4 out of 5, it would be 4.68% of, again, new funding. And if you only met 3 out of 5, it would be 3.5%. So you're differentiating right there. Mm-hmm.
But they'd still have their core.
You are making some statements.
Right. They still have their core.
Right.
They still get an increase in performance funding. Even if they only get 3 out of 5, they still get an increase.
Right.
So we're still allowing them to not take any cut at all for whether it's an abysmal graduation rate or an abysmal student loan repayment rate. And I haven't talked about retention rates. I'll get to those in a minute. But some of the institutions' retention rates, especially at sophomore year, I mean, they basically lose an enormous percentage of their population. And then they just bring in, next year, they just bring in more new kids. They'd still get an increase.
And yet, some of those institutions that have open enrollment, it's tough to have a high graduation rate compared to Truman State. It's just not going to happen. And yet, that is part of their mission. That is what
but it's complete duplication of what the two-year institutions are there for. And that's the problem with an open enrollment four-year institution. It's designed duplication. And again, from a public policy perspective, I can't figure out why on earth we're doing it. But there's no doubt it requires a change in
statute.
It's evolved.
I mean, that's where we are in higher education right now.
I know, but again, yeah. I think a lot of those laws were passed, you know, when the state was growing by enormous percentages every year in general revenue, and they thought that money train would never end.
Right.
Sure, you want more money? Yeah, whatever, here you go.
Right.
And that's just not reality. That's not the world that you and I live in the Senate.
And at the time, there were some pretty powerful political leaders here in the legislature that made sure that it happened.
Right, no doubt about it. But, you know, and I know that's the thing, because if you talk about closing schools, people say, well, politically, you could never get that done. Well, maybe some schools need to be closed, maybe they don't, but at a minimum, there's duplication of programs at a whole lot of those schools that need to be eliminated. And whether or not there's the political will in here to do that, I don't know, but I think it has to start in the appropriations process, which frankly is why a lot of these institutions would like to institutionalize some type of formula, because then that gets them beyond that.
Mm.
I think it takes away the argument somehow that every year they've got to come in and justify their existence.
I would tend to disagree with you on that. If you saw the disagreements we had with COFI and those institutions, to say that they really wanted this, I don't think would be accurate. I mean, we had some great discussions, and I think they've seen the importance of it, but just to say that they're doing this because it's the easy way out.
I don't think it's the easy way out, but
I don't think that would be accurate.
It's some level of guaranteed protection, which I suspect is why a lot of them support
it. Yeah, they do like this because it doesn't involve any of the core money. It's just new money. So I will say that the 4 years like this better than last year's, because last year's some of the existing money was up for consideration.
Well, I've got a couple of amendments, and I should probably go ahead and offer them, because I think at a minimum on the graduation rates, I think that we've got to address that in their core funding. And
on the other hand, you would agree that certain institutions with different selectivity standards should have different graduation rates.
I don't. I mean, because I think that if you look at...
So you think that Harris Stowe should have the same graduation rates as Truman State?
It doesn't mean they have the same criteria or curriculum. Does it mean they should be graduating students? Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
If they're bringing students in, they should have success.
Right.
Whether they teach differently or it's not as rigorous of a criteria as at a Truman State, that's a different story. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't necessarily reflect in graduation rates. They should still be able to graduate those students that they bring in. That they bring in, we provide student aid to, we provide some level of funding to the institution for those students. Those students take on a lot of personal debt, and then they don't succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And in a lot of these institutions, all we do is we just push them right on out the door and we bring in a bunch more. And what's the reason for that? Solely so these institutions can continue to exist. And that's the problem. But I think the graduation rate, whether it be at University of Missouri Columbia or at Truman, which are at the top on ACT scores and other criteria in quality like that, you know, I expect them to have a high graduation rate, just as anyone with a less strenuous admission standard should also have a high graduation rate. All we're doing is failing taxpayers and failing students when we allow this dynamic to continue to exist.
Oh, I think you're right. When you do have a student drop out, nobody wins in a situation like that. I mean, you're burdening students with a high debt. They don't have a degree. They've wasted time. A lot of times they leave with a bad taste in their mouth about higher education, about education in general. So we're not helping them in the long run when we do have high dropout rates. What I'm saying is...
Well, how do we address that?
Well, I think what we do is by having performance funding.
Right, but all you're doing there is you're saying...
Because right now we have nothing.
Right, but all you're doing basically, and again, we don't even know what the coordinating board's going to do in terms of the formula they come up with because we're not doing the formula. But even if they do the standards that we recommend in the bill, what you're still going to get is they still get their core, and they still get some level of increase every year, both potentially for performance.
Not if they had zero out of five. Not if they had zero out of five. And what we're saying
is. Yeah, but right
now
there's not an institution in this state that would get zero out of five.
That's right.
Even with those abysmal statistics that I just read off, everyone still gets something.
Right.
You know, and this is the issue that I have with COFI. When COFI came up with their formula, because I understand, you know, COFI, they all get together and nobody wants to step on anybody else and they all work together. Well, all that results in is a system that kind of waters everything down so everybody gets something. And I just don't think that the budget provides for that anymore. I mean, we're so critical in how we look at how we spend taxpayer dollars in so many other areas of the budget. It is time for us to bring that around to higher education. And I think this is the opportunity. And I'm just afraid if we, again, codify this formula, it's dodging a bullet for a lot of scrutiny on these institutions that they should have. And frankly, I believe they should have it on an annual basis. I think every year those presidents should have to come in and justify the taxpayer dollars that they get and what they're doing for their students and whether success or not.
When they turn in their results, that will be on an annual basis. They will be evaluated on an annual basis. Now, every 3 years, they would have the opportunity, for example, if that issue is no longer relevant or they'd already met the standards and wanted to submit another standard, they could do that. But for 3 years, that would be the standard, but they'd have to apply every year and be evaluated on what those standards are. So it's not like once they're in, they're in. They would have the ability to make some changes on that.
I understand that, but I just don't think it goes far enough.
But it's a start.
It is a start, and I think it could be made better, and that's my whole point, is what I would like to do is have that hearing, move forward, basically bring to light, put some sunshine on some of these statistics, which I think a lot of people are really surprised when you tell them these results, and then move forward with your bill and see if we can't make it better and actually hold some people's feet to the fire and get better results. And whether that's through higher quality education at some institutions, better student success at others, I think there's a way to do that.
Well, I think that it'll be a healthy discussion when the university presidents come, and I think it's good that they will have to address those issues that you brought up. But I think you're right. We haven't really asked them in the past to address those certain issues. I don't think that we've ever said, you will come and you have to talk about graduation rates, retention rates,
we've had them come in.
Oh, well, absolutely.
They talk about all the great things their institutions are doing, but, you know, we're all very busy in the appropriations process and we focus on a lot of different aspects of the budget. And I think that really they haven't had any critical review of the programs that they offer, at least since I've been around. So this is the opportunity to do that. And again, which is why I'm so apprehensive about moving a bill forward that kind of lets them off the hook on that. And I know you don't think it lets them off the hook because there are five performance standards, but I don't think those standards go far enough. So, again, on that 10% equity adjustment,
right?
I still don't understand how that works. Because, again, all these numbers that I've given, and again, I've got a lot more, especially on the retention rates.
You remember that
they're inequitable.
You remember the equity issue that we had a couple of years ago, right?
Which one was that?
The one where
SEMO got some extra money because yes.
And then a lot of other people said, "What about me?"
I'll be the first one to admit, you know, those are very difficult circumstances, and unfortunately, that's how we budgeted for a lot of things, and this is our opportunity to get away from that.
Right.
But what ended up happening?
That was a horrible way to legislate.
Well, because of the deal that we had to work out with the House, SEMO, what did they get? Like $2 million extra dollars? Or I can't remember what it was.
I believe a million, but then...
They got a million. One and two,
then
they
other got universities got a lot, with the exception of Missouri State and MU. And then so last year, to make up for that, then Missouri State and MU got more to make up for past inequities, and yet part of it was to create whole new programs. So how are you making up inequity by creating new programs? I mean,
no, I agree. It's inequitable.
It made no sense. It made no sense. I mean, that is not a way to make up for past inequity issues. And yet, again, that's just how we have evolved in higher education. There hasn't been a plan. There hasn't been scrutiny. There hasn't been a way to establish performance. And I think that's what this bill does.
I agree with you. We need a plan.
And we have a plan.
But I think allowing each one of those institutions to continue with their own boards, competing with one another, trying to offer everything to everyone, and in that circumstance, probably taking students that aren't prepared to be there, having students take on student debt that they should never take on, we have to address those issues.
So your thought is you would like to abolish all boards of governors and boards of trustees.
And
that should be a part of this bill.
If we were to follow Ohio, Georgia, other states that have gotten this right in the relatively near past, so they were where we were at one point, although at 13 institutions, 13 campuses, we have a lot compared to a lot of other states. You know, you have states that have gone to a one-tiered system. So you have one board that oversees all institutions. You have a two-tiered system, which I think in a lot of ways makes probably more sense for what we have now that we have to deal with.
So you're intimately involved in the confirmation process we got going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine if we just had one or two super boards out there and the problems that we would have when it came to confirming new folks to serve on that new board of trustees?
I think we could do that. I could see, because you would have, and there's no doubt that you have institutions that depending on which tier they were in, would want some input on getting someone onto that board. That's how the process works, and I would assume that would work. So whether it's somebody geographically from a certain region that they would want on their board, that's one way to look at it. And I realize these are big changes.
They're huge changes.
I understand that. But
they're huge changes.
But the circumstance we have right now, allowing it to go on, it's never, ever going to really be enough. We're going to have institutions at the top that are constantly held back because they don't have the resources that their peer institutions have in other states. We're constantly going to have institutions on the bottom getting tax dollars, putting students in positions that do not make them successful, yet we're going to turn a blind eye to it. We're going to keep going and keep going, and it's just going to perpetuate itself. It has to change. And well, I think the difference now is, you know, it was different before, especially politically, dealing with it out on this floor when we had a lot of money. It was like, yeah, maybe that's not perfect, but you know what? We can give this school something or give that school something. That just doesn't exist. We live in a reality now where each one of us has to come out on this floor and justify things that senators before us never had to justify. Because dollars are tight, there is so much more public scrutiny on what we do and what we spend money on than there was even 10 years ago. So I think when you look at the reality of how do we fix this problem overall, create stronger higher ed institutions, and have a better distribution of resources for success for not only students but for the institutions themselves, I think we have to get out on this floor and justify those changes that need to be made. And so when you look at some of these statistics, I think it's going to be very, very hard for anyone to jump out and say, well, yeah, sure, those are horrible numbers, but we need to keep that situation going.
Well, and then part of the language does talk about institution performance measures shall include student retention and graduation rates. So that's in there.
It is.
It's in there.
I understand. But we don't know. First of all, that's a criteria.
They're going to be evaluated on that.
But we don't know what the standard's going to be for that criteria. I guess we'll see it after coordinating board puts it out. But even if it's punitive, as punitive as it could be, all it's going to do is hold a little bit of new money back, and they still get other new money, and it doesn't affect their core. That doesn't fix the problem that right now, that pie being cut into 13 pieces just isn't going to work. And again, we haven't even gotten into the relationship between the 2 years and the 4 years. But there's no doubt, just right off the top, we have four-year institutions that are duplicating what the entire two-year system is designed and exists to do. It has to be addressed.
Oh, I think all those issues have to be addressed. I don't think you have to solve everything before you can pass some good legislation. And I think you can
I think we do.
And I think you can take it in stages. I mean, if we wait until we get rid of all of our boards and of trustees and governors before we pass performance funding or pass anything to help higher ed, we'll never get it done.
I'm afraid if we pass performance funding like this, we're never going to get any of it done. Because that's dodging the bullet. It's over. Okay, we've got a system. Hey, look, we got these five criteria. We're going to let them work for a couple of years and see how they work.
Well, you're going to be around. You're going to be around for 2 more years.
I will. But the thing is, you know, I've got 2 more sessions after this.
I don't think it'll be ignored. I think this is a step in the right direction.
I think it's a step in the right direction, but not far enough. And again, I've only got 2 sessions left after this, and I think it's critical that we get this done. And I know that you know, as chairman of education, these things need to be done.
Right. They need to be discussed. They need to be on the floor and vetted, and people have an opportunity to debate it.
Right. But I'm afraid if we pass this, we're not going to have that opportunity.
I'm afraid if we don't pass it, it's status quo. And what's the incentive to change?
Because this concept of funding them, even in this year's budget... You know, I have some serious questions about these statistics. And I don't think that there's a good reason or a good explanation for a lot of why we have allowed this to exist.
And that's perfectly in your ability to ask those questions.
Right.
It's in my ability when I'm on the appropriations.
But I think that when we get to House Bill 3, and remember, we usually treat them all the same. And you know this because you've been on the committee as long as I have.
Right.
We get to House Bill 3, and we've got that line, and it's broken down with all the institutions, and we just
line
kind of lump them all together, and we go, there you go. I think this is the year that we should not do that. I think this is the year that, based on what we hear on the 11th, and starting at this point now, that should be addressed this year. And we shouldn't leave it to the coordinating board. It's our job to do that in the appropriations process.
So who is going to filter all those requests? Who's going to be taking in all those results and then making those determinations? We don't have staff to do that.
It's pretty
maybe
simple.
Maybe Trevor. Maybe he could do it.
If you've got a graduation rate of 8%, 10%, 12%, there has to be some consequence for that level of performance. Just like student retention rates, just like student default rates. I think that we have the ability. I mean, we take on some very complex issues in healthcare, which we have to weigh a lot of factors in determining how much money we're going to put into certain things. I think that collectively, as a committee, I think we have the ability to make those adjustments. We have to have the will to do it.
Right, right. And I think we can. I think we can get there. I just don't know if we can do everything in one legislative session.
I don't know that
and
we need to do everything in one session.
Is a huge step in the right direction.
You know, I think the other thing, we have to have a discussion about consolidation of some institutions. And I think that as long as we control the state's portion of the budget that goes to those institutions, it goes a long way in us voicing our opinions on how we believe that procurement costs can be lowered, back office costs can be lowered, a lot of savings for taxpayers, more money for the classroom, frankly, more money for professors. Because we're losing professors, as you know, at most of our institutions, because we can't compete with other states.
I remember last year, and you've been very, very consistent on this, I will say, because last year we talked about performance funding, and you mentioned the consolidation. Would this happen? I said, that's not what this bill is designed to do. And so I would also say that is not what this bill is designed to do this year either. Is that a healthy discussion to have? Absolutely. And when they come through the appropriations process, I think that's a good time. But to wait until if and when there's consolidation before we institute performance funding, I think we're wasting a golden opportunity.
And I think we can
hold our institutions accountable now if this is passed, as opposed to waiting until we get some perfect legislation passed in several years.
No, but I think the problem is I think we lose the leverage. Because once we pass this, then all the momentum is, hey, we just passed this funding bill. See, we are all the same, and if we're not, it'll just pan out in this bill. But we do nothing, again, to address what we know exists right now in the core. And I think that that has to be addressed. Rather than the expectation that there's no punitive response for poor performance. And by the way, even if you have poor performance going forward, you're still going to get more money. You're still going to get more taxpayer dollars. You might not get as much as somebody that's doing a great job, but you're still going to get something. And I think that's the absolute wrong message to send to some of these institutions.
Right now, some institutions, those five that met all five standards, are getting about 5.5. Those that only met four are getting about 4.5% increase, and those that met three are getting a 3.5% increase. So there is some consequences in that.
But some of those institutions that meet the five don't have a very good graduation rate. They're losing student population, yet they'd still meet all five of the criteria.
And those are criteria that you think are important, but does that necessarily mean that's what the university has turned in?
Because
I can't say that they were necessarily judged on graduation, retention, whatever some other important things that you think or I think. I mean, that's what the institutions thought.
I know,
important.
But I think...
And this performance funding does mention graduation and retention, which gets to some of the problems that you think we need to address, and I agree too.
But what about loss of student population? What about schools that are actually shrinking in size, but they meet all five of the performance standards, so they get more state funding? And I'll tell you, the reason some of those schools are shrinking in size is they're not offering a higher ed product that students that have the decision of where they want to go, they're not choosing that. And for whatever reason, whether it's not perceived as a high quality degree or whatever. But that has to be recognized somewhere as well. Now that's different from, for example, what Truman's done, which is they have a self-imposed limit.
Right, and that's part of their mission. They don't want to have 11,000
right.
students.
You know,
it would change their mission.
I'll tell you, the more I've learned, and I've really looked into this over the summer, the more I've learned about Truman, it really is amazing the job that Truman is doing.
And they've been.
And I think Dr. McClain had a vision a long time ago and implemented it, and I think it worked exactly as he wanted it to work.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you look at that and you say, okay, that can work, why can't we be doing that at other institutions? Instead of, again, coming up with a funding formula that's relatively soft and lets them continue to do what they do. Because again, that $800 million in the core, that's going to be the majority of the core.
Well, I agree.
So some of these schools, frankly, really aren't going to want to make the hard choices. Maybe they get four out of the five, they give up a little bit. They're still getting a lot, especially if they're losing population.
Let me tell you, one university president, which I won't name his name, was very upset that they just missed it by very, very little, going from one category to the next. And believe me, they notice when they don't get that, and it's significant. And they weren't pleased the way that DESE calculated certain things, and they weren't pleased with the way that the results came out, and they wanted to appeal that decision. And so it does make big impacts on these universities when they don't get all those. And another thing is very, very public. You know, when you have to go back to your Board of Governors and say, oh, sorry, we only got 3 out of 5, everybody knows that. It's public. The faculty, the staff, the students, I mean, it's in the media. And the universities have
right.
to justify why
they didn't.
Right,
so what'll happen, you know, that gets out there.
And I think that's good.
They lose a little bit of credibility. They lose more students, like some of them are doing now. They still get their core, and they still get new money, just not as much.
That's correct. It's not as much. But I think it does make an impact. And right now, there's nothing in state statute that would say that this is going to continue like we are right now. I mean, the way that these dollars are recommended, there's nothing in our state statute that compels us to do that. And so that's why it's important.
Right, there's nothing that compels us to fund any of these institutions, really, at any level.
Oh, you're right, right.
It's still short of the University of Missouri, which is mentioned in the Constitution, and we're supposed to fund it. But we could fund it at whatever level. There's nothing that dictates how much we fund any of them.
Right.
Yet they have come to believe that they have an entitlement to a lot of money. And, you know, I mean, some of the schools, for example, that made promises that if they could just go from being a 2-year to a 4-year, they would never come back and ask for anything else. Well, now they believe that, frankly, they're entitled to equity funding to be the same as Truman, even though they have a graduation rate substantially lower. They have a higher student default rate. Again, it's this sense that somehow we've always been funded this way, so we deserve it. And it's a brutal reality, but that's what it is. I mean, how can we go out there and talk to taxpayers and justify a large percentage of what we're doing in higher ed? We can't.
And it's because we have evolved our higher education policy. Or a lack of policy, and
it's completely decentralized. And why should it be? We're the ones that fund it. It's a public product. It's something that we put out there that is part of our mission to make sure that's a public service that's available. We should be making that decision, and we should make that decision every single year.
And I'll be the first one to admit,
we should probably be much more critical and how we fund that than we have been in the past. But I'm ready to start doing that right now.
And I think if we did have a debate on this floor about abolishing all the boards and all the Board of Governors and the trustees, I think it would be a very healthy and very vigorous
I'm ready
debate.
To have that discussion right now. In fact, I mean, as chairman of the Education Committee, what about the concept of a two-tiered system, like many other states have and many states have recently gone to?
Again, no two states do it alike.
True, but there are universal truths in higher ed at institutions, which is why institutions across this country can compare themselves to one another, just as students do every day when they make the decision of where they're going to go to school.
So in your perfect world, how would you do it? What institutions would you lump together? How would you have one or two different boards? Which ones would you consolidate?
I think that's what we need to talk about. Yeah. But I think that there's a recognition that not all schools are the same. They serve different purposes.
Oh, I think all of us realize that.
I mean, you have University of Missouri Columbia, here. You have Rolla, you have Truman, you have institutions that have very rigorous academic standards and a very high standard to get
right.
in. And, you know, they're not competing really with some of the other schools in the state. They are competing nationally
right.
with other schools that are at that higher tier. Now, what's happening is we're not giving them all the resources that we otherwise should probably give them to have that competition, draw in those students from other states, because we're funding 13 and 4-year campuses. But that's part of the problem. But I think also there is a basis for regional 4-year institutions. I don't know how long in the future that'll continue with more things going online, but I still think that exists. I mean, it used to be, and the reason for that model was, you know, there was a public policy decision that it was a good thing for people to get 4-year degrees to mm-hmm. continue with their education because of employment purposes and everything else.
Right. And it was regional because you had Northwest, Northeast, Southeast, Southwest,
right.
and Central.
Because it wasn't that long ago, if they didn't have to go, you know, if they had to go farther than, you know, 50 miles to get a 4-year degree, they weren't going to get it. And so the decision was made, make it more accessible. geographically.
Right.
Put them around so it's easier for people to go to. Because they're not going to leave home, whether they work on the farm or they're not going to leave their family or a lot of other reasons. But a lot of those pressures do not exist anymore. Some of them probably do, but not like it used to.
And we have technology today, you know, online courses. I mean, you can live one part of the state and take courses somewhere else.
We have the governor of the state of Missouri. We have a department of higher ed that oversees these campuses. We put a lot of money in those. And we got the governor doing TV commercials telling people to go to the Western Governors University online. I don't know what message that is sending to people, but it seems very odd to me.
It seemed very odd to me, too.
What is it called? Western Governors University?
Yeah, it was established by the Western Governors.
Is that like Western University Governors. Of Phoenix, or what is it? I don't quite understand.
I think it's a not-for-profit. And
yeah, but remember, non-profit doesn't mean you don't make a profit.
Right.
They it just means
they
you have to
keep it.
You have to keep all your money.
Right.
So you can pay high salaries and you can put a lot of your money back into building more stuff, which is what people do who make a lot of money, but you still are a nonprofit. So, but I don't know. I don't know what this entity is.
Western Governors is not part of this performance funding model.
Right, but that's part of the problem. I mean, we got the governor of the state of Missouri directing students who otherwise might go to SEMO or Central or Truman or, hey, why don't you go to Western Governors? Get your degree online. Bypass our state schools. What kind of endorsement is that? I don't get. And what is the cost? What's the tuition at Western? Governors? I keep getting yeah. Western Governors University.
I believe so, but there's a lot of other state, and I think a state itself has to join. Is how that works through the National Governors Association.
Did we
You're
join? Because I don't recall as a senator either as a senator out on this floor in the appropriations process doing anything to join the Western Governors Association.
Mm.
So are we a member state now? Do you know?
I don't know. Maybe you could ask our minority floor leader. She might know.
She doesn't look like she knows. But she does have
a
device.
She's looking it up. She's looking it up.
Maybe she can whisper that to you of what it is. But is there a tuition? Do you know? I mean, you're the chairman of education. I'm the chairman of appropriations.
Right.
We got the governor doing TV commercials for this thing, and you and I don't even know what it is.
My understanding, it would be similar to the cost of other online courses. But
online
I don't have
courses
any more details than that. So.
At University of Missouri? Missouri State? I mean, I don't know. Who's on the board, I wonder? Is it all governors?
I'm not sure how it's administered.
Is Missouri a Western state? Do
well,
we qualify?
I think some of the Midwestern states.
They have
states,
a basketball
like,
team. That's what I want.
They don't have that, nor a mascot.
What
but I think like
what
Ohio.
What conference is Missouri Western Governors in?
Yeah, I think Pac-10? I don't know.
I don't think so.
You said you had some amendments.
I do, but I want to talk about some more statistics because
okay.
I gave you some of them on the. I gave you those trends in enrollment. That was just over the last year. I mean, I've got them for 3 years and 5 years, too. And I think that's interesting. It's a little bit difficult, though, to look at those numbers and determine what they mean. Because what happened during the recession, you know, starting really in 2008, 2009, you had a lot of people who were, you know, involuntarily removed from the workforce. They lost their jobs. And without a lot of opportunity, they went
back to school. Right.
So that skews the numbers a lot on what really that trend would have looked like.
Right.
But, you know, you can go back.
They have jobs, then they go to the job market and leave school.
Right.
So, right.
But these numbers that I have, really, they're 2007 to 2012. So they're, you know, before the recession and then during, but changes in student population. Harris Stowe lost 15.9% of its population. Lincoln lost 0.8% overall. So in the long term, Lincoln has not lost as many, but in the last year, 8.8%. Missouri Southern's lost 1.1%. And again, these are over five. This is 2007 to 2012, because that's the most recent data we have. Missouri State University it gained 5.8%. Rolla gained 21.2% in 5 years. You know, and that's another big factor, too. How do you quantify that? And the resources that we provide as a state to these institutions. I mean, in 5 years, Rolla has grown 21.2%. And again, not an open enrollment institution, very high standards to get in, and generally very high placement rate with their graduates.
Now the assumption you're making is that enrollment has nothing to do with funding. And it does, because when the universities submit their proposals in September, October to Department of Higher Education, that is taken into consideration. And so if
enrollment, you mean in what they charge for tuition or what they're requesting?
Numbers. I mean, it does matter how many students you have at your university. And so if you're
to a certain extent, but we don't acknowledge that when essentially we fund them on an annual basis based on what they got the year before. So whether the population's going up or down, you know, whether you're Rolla and you've gained 21.2% population, or you're Harris Stowe and you lost 15.9% of your population, we're still going to say, well, we gave you X amount last year, so you get the same amount, or you get 3% more, or 5% more, or, you know, whatever the percent's going to be. That has to be recognized as well. Because, again, some of these institutions with growth rates like that are stretched substantially compared to those that are still really, even if they're at flat funding, they've got way fewer students. Missouri Western has grown 13.2%. Northwest Missouri State University grown 3.7%. Southeast Missouri State University has grown 16.6%. Truman State, again, has gone down 1.1%, and I think that's because of the cap that they imposed. University of Central Missouri has grown 9.9%. University of Missouri Columbia, 22.9% growth, so even more than Rolla. University of Missouri Kansas City has grown 15.8%. And University of Missouri St. Louis has grown 6%. I think the interesting thing, too, is, you know, some of these institutions have had pretty substantial tuition increases. And for some of them that have increased their tuition, their population still continues to grow. So it goes to show that even, I mean, at some point, obviously, they must have been underpriced because they're increasing the cost and students are still choosing to go there.
Well, that would be one factor. I mean, it wouldn't be the only factor, I don't think.
No, it's not the only one. I mean, what would some other
factors? But obviously, if it's overpriced, that would make a difference, too.
Well, if it's overpriced, which is what I think you see at a lot of these institutions, students simply stop going there.
Right.
I mean, at some point.
And they vote with their feet.
Well, right. They believe that it's the cost of what the degree.
That's a good thing.
Right. It's not worth it.
Right.
And I think that's absolutely true. I think students are generally correct in a lot of the decisions they make in that regard. So, I mean, what do you think about, aside from new performance funding, putting something into your bill that basically would address core funding? I mean, you oppose
it? It would have more of a, it would make more of a statement, obviously, if it involved core funding, not just new funding. What I'm saying is the bill that I have is the results of months and months of compromise and working with the universities.
And I agree with you on that. And you have done a tremendous job, and I know you've put a lot of time into this. The problem with the compromise is I don't know that compromise is where we need to be at this point. I think compromise is what has led us to the type of funding we've had for the last 20 years, which is everyone comes together and they kind of compromise, and at some point somebody says, well, you got this 1 year and I get this next year because I didn't get it before. And I think that we have to step up and acknowledge these are apples and oranges. They're not all apples.
Oh, I don't think anyone's ever said the universities are the same, nor should they be treated the same.
You know, and if we want to make a decision that, you know, we want open enrollment four-year institutions, then I guess that's a decision that we could make.
We have made that decision.
I know, but why would we then continue to fund two-year institutions to do the exact same thing? I've been searching for the answer to this question. Why do we do that? It is the nature of two-year institutions to be open enrollment. And whether it's, you know, remedial courses that they're offering for somebody who's not prepared for a four-year institution, they are the pathway for someone. And they're the pathway for a lot of things. I mean, if somebody wants job training, we do a lot of job training through the two-year institutions. Somebody wants to go back and just take a couple of classes because it's relevant to their job, that's different. But for that population of students that want to go to a four-year institution and they can't get in, the two-year institutions are the open enrollment institutions that are the pathway for them to do that. So why do we have four-year institutions that do the exact same thing?
So your suggestion is to basically ignore what that board of directors or board of governors said, and the state.
Why do we even give a board of curators or board of directors or board of trustees, whatever they want to call themselves, the ability to decide how expansive they're going to be in that regard? That's how we got into this problem. And I think as a state, we need to say we don't need open enrollment four-year institutions. I'm not saying that that means that every open enrollment institution is not needed, because those institutions do other things as well.
That they should be community colleges? Is that what you're saying?
I think that they should have programs, four-year selective or moderately selective criteria for admission. Because if all they are is an open enrollment institution, then they are geographically located in an area where there is a community college. Because I think that's at least one thing we got right, is on the community colleges, there's not a lot of duplication.
Right.
Because they are located geographically. There is a community college in your area, and that's where you go. And, you know, frankly, if we recognize and embrace that policy, we would free up a lot more money to both create more opportunities for the 2 years for those students that need that pathway, as well as more opportunities for the more selective 4 years. But again, an institution that's going to have that change in its mission is not going to go along willingly.
Right.
But like I said, that's not to say that every institution that is an open enrollment four-year institution doesn't serve any other purpose. Because I'm assuming they do other things. It's just probably because loss of student population for purposes of marketing and a lot of other things, they needed to keep their enrollment rates up, so they just lowered their standards, basically, and opened the door to anybody. But we need to look at that critically and say, is that really the only reason that you exist? Because if it is, then we've got decisions to make about why that's necessary.
Well, and I think that's why we're in the boat that we're in right now, because it has just evolved over time. And there hasn't been a cohesive higher education policy. This bill speaks to that. And it's something. And if we're going to wait until we get all of higher education totally organized the way we pick and choose from other states, we'll never get it done.
You know, I don't know that we can get it all moving at one time, but I think that there are parts that we should probably look at critically and get moving now.
Performance funding.
Well, the other thing is, when you look at some of these institutions, I mean, some of them are very different from one another, but there are other institutions that are very similar in what they do, and in some ways complementary of other institutions.
And we tried to do that last year in the Carnegie classifications, and yet we couldn't get it done.
In the formula last year.
Right. We tried to do that, and people said, you can't do that, you know, and we worked hard on that. And we tried to put different institutions in different categories, tried to totally change the way that we looked at our universities, and we couldn't get it done.
I think you probably got more done than you realized, though, because I think that was the start of the conversation.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, time was not wasted.
Had you not done that bill last year, we probably wouldn't be talking about this right now.
I would definitely agree.
You know, it had to start somewhere.
Right.
But
it's a long process.
It is a long process.
It's a long
process.
From
my perspective, we're just not all the way there yet. But the other thing, too, is I don't know that it's our job as senators to dictate every aspect of every higher ed institution. I don't think it is. Because we have, whether you know it's the governing board or the presidents of the universities, they govern their institutions. The problem is each institution doesn't need its own board and its own administrative bureaucracy. So the question for us is not so much dictating how every school goes, but why not dictate a bigger structure and then let those management entities make that decision? I think what you're doing is going in the right direction. I think that for this session in particular, though, we're very early in the session. You know, I'm eagerly awaiting to hear from all those presidents.
Mm-hmm.
And again, my apprehension about the bill is that we codify something that gets them out of the level of scrutiny that we need to be applying right now. And so that's why I think your bill could be better. I think you've gotten us to the point that we're at right now where we would not be here. You know, and the other thing, too, is, I mean, it actually, you know, being from the district that has University of Missouri Columbia, which is, you know, it's the biggest employer in my district and everything else, higher ed's always been a big issue. But I'll admit, I probably had not thought as critically about higher ed funding before as I should have until really your bill came up last year. And it caused me to really look at how we fund that in a different way. And over the summer, again, which is when I put a lot of this information together in the fall, and started looking at things that, frankly, as chairman of appropriations, I had not seen before. And I think that that's the start of the discussion. But I think this concept of consolidating management units at these institutions is a discussion that we need to have sooner rather than later. And I'm just very apprehensive about doing anything that takes that off the table.
Well, and I definitely think those discussions need to be had, whether it's consolidation or the mission statements of the universities. And certainly graduation retention rates, very, very important. I think it's very important that we get something done as opposed to just sitting and talking about it and waiting for the perfect piece of legislation. And we can talk and talk and talk, but pretty soon as a legislative body, we've got to get something done. And this is a step in the right direction. Performance funding does make universities more accountable. It is a way for us as a legislature to say what is important as a state. And if we do nothing, we're just going to have the status quo, and we'll be back here next year saying, gosh, I wish we'd have done something.
I know, but I don't want, I mean, our discussion to be construed by anyone as a desire to not do anything.
And I appreciate that. It's important to talk about these things. But I don't want perfect to be the enemy of good in this. And there's a lot of good things that we're talking about.
I agree with that, and I think a lot of what is in your bill is good. I just don't think it goes far enough. But I don't think I'm looking for the perfect.
And then last year, I was criticized of going too far. You know, so where's the sweet spot?
Well, I believe there is one, but that's a very good point. Because the bill last year, with all the criteria being dictated by the General Assembly, it was too hard to have that criteria that fit all of them. Which is what led to the senator from the 15th to offer his amendment to take Truman out and treat it differently, because arguably they are different. And you can't take an institution that's going to implement its own cap in order to maintain a high level of quality and say somehow now, because they would have been penalized under that formula because they would not have had growth.
Right.
Yet
right.
At the same time, we're promoting growth by lowering standards at a bunch of the other institutions, which is exactly what we should not be incentivizing.
Senator, I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation tonight, and I think this will be the first step of many discussions we have on this floor and behind the scenes. And with that, Mr. President, I ask that the bill be laid over on the informal calendar.